with Minus Materials, switching our biorenewable limestone for your regular geological limestone without changing anything else in the process, you see a 60% reduction in CO2 emissions. And that's not changing anything else. That's using the same dirty coal-fired kiln at 1450 degrees Celsius and the same plant that we were using yesterday. It's just about switching that input material.
Welcome to the podcast. It's your host, Wesley Dang. This is IndieBio Killer of the Week. For those of you who are new to the show, Killer of the Week is an internal competition where our founders compete against each other to see who has made the most progress in the past 7 days. And today, we're going to be talking about the most popular building material in the world. And if you haven't already guessed it, it makes up your roads, your sidewalks, it's under your homes, as your home's foundation. We're talking about concrete. And concrete is that material that we trust to build 100-story skyscrapers in the middle of the city because we know it's strong enough to not collapse. It's that material that we trust for our dams and the material that we trust for literally every underwater structure because we know it's going to last. But concrete has a dark side. It makes up about 8% of the world's carbon emissions. And if concrete were a country, it would be the third biggest emitter of carbon on the planet, behind only China and the United States. Now, you could probably hear this and think, okay, well, we'll probably need to use less concrete in the future. And I don't see that happening anytime soon. This is such a popular material. In fact, by weight, concrete probably makes up almost half of everything humans have ever manufactured. And it's still becoming more and more popular. Concrete consumption is not slowing down. As more and more countries are coming into the middle class and building their cities that need roads and interstates and foundations and skyscrapers, they're going to keep using concrete because it's tried and true. In 2011 to 2013, that's a 3-year span, China used more concrete than the U.S. has used in the entire 20th century. Global Cement published a report that estimates that the world uses enough concrete and cement to build a city the size of Paris every week. So, yes, let's move on with the assumption that we're not going to slow down concrete consumption. And so what that means is we're going to have to find a way to decarbonize it. And we're talking with one of our companies today who has a plan to decarbonize concrete production using biology. Our guest today is Sarah Williams, the CEO of Minus Materials. And I'm sure that many of you have heard about Minus Materials since they have been in a few news outlets, including Fast Company. I think the title is like, this company wants to make cement out of algae or something, like grow cement out of thin air. But we're here with Sarah so that she can tell you exactly what Minus Materials does if you haven't already read those articles.
Yeah, thanks, Wes. I'm really happy to be here. I'm Sarah Williams. I'm CEO and co-founder of Minus Materials. And Minus Materials, we are laser focused on solving the cement industry's carbon problem, and we think we can do it with biology. So cement production accounts for approximately 7% of global CO2 emissions, and it's notoriously one of the most difficult industries to decarbonize. So our strategy to get there starts with actually growing biorenewable limestone. Limestone's the main feedstock material for cement production, and we grow a biorenewable limestone product using calcareous microalgae.
And limestone, calcium carbonate, and chalk, like the chalk that I used to see it in elementary school on a blackboard, that's all the same?
Yes.
Okay, interesting. It's interesting that chalk is basically the glue for these big skyscrapers that I'm in.
Yeah, and there are lots of chalk puns in the cockle of the four world. Believe it or not, one of my favorite review papers is called Chalking Up Progress about Cockle of Course. So.
And your co-founder is Will Srubar, who was your PhD advisor, right? Can you tell us more about the origins of Minus Materials And then also, maybe we can use that as a lead in to your research with Will, your dissertation. Maybe that's relevant to what you're building at Midas Materials.
Yeah, definitely. This one is kind of a doozy. So Will and I do go way back. We met in like 2015, and we actually met at a conference in France. We found out that we are both from Texas, and we both went to the University of Texas at Austin. And the way we found that out is that he overheard me talking about people using names and speaking in English, of course, at this conference in France. And so I think he immediately was like, English. And then he was like, wait, I know these people. So we became friends at that conference. It was the International Bio-Based Building Materials Conference. So pretty niche group. And we stayed in touch after that. I had just finished my master's degree at the University of Texas in Austin. And so I was working on biological self-healing concrete. But that was my master's research project. And Will at the time was doing a lot of work with biopolymers and essentially biopolymer replacements for wood products in the construction industry. So we weren't really working on the same thing, but we both had this strong passion of coming from the traditional civil engineer world. We both have degrees in civil engineering and have worked in just the plain old, you know, concrete industry where things change slow and we know the pieces and the people. But we always stayed in touch because we were friends. And on top of that, we just had this bizarre sort of similar goal. So I had just finished my master's degree. And at that time, I moved to Vicksburg, Mississippi, and I worked for 3 years as a research civil engineer at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Research and Development Center. And so during my time there, I spent about half my time doing forensic investigations of concrete locks and dams that were experiencing durability issues or other service issues. And I also got to do a lot of basic research and proposal writing and things like that. So I was building on what I worked on in my master's degree, which was working with bacteria to produce calcium carbonate for a self-healing concrete. And that's when I was really trying to expand on that idea and decided to move more into the algae space and realized how this made so much more sense from a decarbonization standpoint, given that algae are photosynthetic and bacteria are not, meaning that they uptake CO2. During their growth process, and also our algae uptakes additional CO2 and stores it in the form of limestone when it precipitates the calcite shells. So I wrote a proposal, and it got funded. I got a $700,000 proposal funded through the DoD that was on diatoms and coccolithophores to like manipulate minerals or novel cementitious materials. I had some other cool projects as well that I was excited about, but just all moved a little too slow for my liking. Mm-hmm. And I'm not kidding. Like, came together, like, I had a bunch of meetings with people. And of course, you know, they were like, oh, you're going to need to talk to synthetic biologists. You're going to need to talk to geologists. You're going to talk to these people. So I kind of had assembled this big bloated team to do this $700,000 project through the DoD. And everybody said the right stuff, but I just really was like, it's not going to happen. I know it isn't. I know it's not going to happen. Because I knew that it was just going to go too slow and there was going to be lip service as there is in all of the government stuff. So I quit my job, and that's when I went back to grad school. And that's when Will and I started working together officially. So I went to the University of Colorado Boulder, and I joined the Living Materials Lab, which is ran by Will. And he had been working a lot in the life cycle assessment space. He has a lot of great insight into construction decarbonization, as well as like carbon offset methodologies and just kind of the carbon economy in the construction industry. And then I have the stronger bio background. I think we would both agree on that. And then we both love cement and concrete, and we want to fix it. So my dissertation research was actually on using diatoms as a source of biosilica for like a biorenewable supplementary cementitious material. And so diatoms they're kind of like the cousins to coccolithophores, but they make silica shells instead of calcite shells.
Mm-hmm. And so, coccolithophores is what you're using.
Yes, that's what Midas Materials uses to grow the limestone.
Coccolithophores is an algae.
Yes.
Are diatoms an algae?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, they're both single-celled microalgae, and they both are biomineralizers.
And so Sarah, your dissertation was one of the few dissertations of our founders that I've read all the way through. And congratulations to you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad someone did. Not everyone can say that.
And I think that one chapter of that dissertation was to essentially prove that you can test the compressive strength of a concrete made with the diatoms at smaller sample sizes. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, I made little cement paste cubes. So yeah, that's, we obviously were working in like an analytical chemistry lab size space. So I had limited materials. But yeah, so I basically proved biosilica derived from diatoms was highly reactive and showed promise as a supplementary cementitious material.
Mm-hmm. Which is another name for like basically glue. For anyone who doesn't know, like concrete is basically just lots of little rocks and sand glued together with cement. And when you're saying these supplementary cementitious materials, is that a synonym for the cement or another part of the cement?
That is great. Let's back up. So concrete is, as you said, comprised of aggregates and cement paste. And so cement paste is the glue holding everything together. Traditionally, we make cement paste with Portland cement, which is 95% clinker and 5% gypsum. The reason 5% gypsum is added is to control the set time reactions.
Mm.
It's very well agreed upon in academia and in the industry that to make sustainable concrete today is to use supplementary cementitious materials to lower your clinker amount. So instead of using that 95% clinker, which is the really, really high carbon intensive stuff that has to go through the kiln at 1450 degrees Celsius and that off gases all of this CO2 that I'm talking about, instead of using that, we can use other materials, typically siliceous and aluminosiliceous materials that on their own, if I mix fly ash with water, it doesn't make concrete.
Mm-hmm.
But if I mix Portland cement and 20% fly ash, it actually kicks off the reaction and they work really well together to create a cement paste binder that has a lower carbon impact.
Interesting.
So this typical fly ash is the most widely used supplementary cementitious material. We're actually coming up. It's actually a hot topic that people are really nervous about availability of fly ash now, though, because it's a coal byproduct. So as we're trying to reduce our coal usage, there's just less and less high quality fly ash available. And also, you know, it used to be this stuff was basically free and they had so much of it, but now it's like basically written into every single concrete project. When like every DOT project wants to use 20% fly ash, you run out of all the fly ash basically. So
interesting.
There's a lot of like work on remediated flat, like lower quality ashes and trying to make them better to use. But
yeah. That's why you were trying to find a renewable or a greener alternative to fly ash.
Yes, exactly.
Which is the biosilica thing. And
yes.
So your dissertation essentially proved that yes, you can use it because it's highly reactive. It turns into the cementitious paste and it makes concrete. And now we have new methods to make the iterative cycle faster. You can use smaller sample sizes to test compressive strength.
Yeah.
That is concordant with bigger sample sizes.
Yes.
Right? Okay, yeah. Great. But that's getting away from Midas Materials because you were developing a novel SCM. And what Midas Materials is making is a drop-in for the cement industry that already exists, which is you're making ordinary Portland cement, right? Or you're making the limestone to make ordinary Portland cement.
Currently, we're making the limestone. Yeah, and like I mentioned, limestone's the main feedstock for cement production. So we're one step ahead of the cement production in the raw material space, where we're looking to replace the limestone. In the long term, I think we have really big ambitions about, we certainly want to make our own cements and have our own ready mix operations and precast products. But currently our focus is on figuring out the scaling of the biorenewable limestone.
Got it. Okay. So help our listeners understand how you're growing this limestone. It's not like you're just going to plant a limestone seed and grow fields of it. But someone who knows more about algae might think that you're doing it in a raceway pond or something.
Initially, when we dove into this, we thought it had to be open ponds because especially about like 5 or 10 years ago and the like huge wave of algae biofuel companies, pretty much everyone was saying like open ponds is the only way, like PBRs, photobioreactors, PBRs are never gonna get cheap enough. But actually we found that there's been some super cool innovations in closed cultivation systems in the last like 10 years or so. There's people doing like hanging bag photoreactors that are very low cost. They're just like big plastic bags. You can also use like acrylic tubing, all kinds of things like that. So we're definitely leaning towards using a closed system. So we see having large arrays of reactors that are like horizontal tubes, things like that. And I think we see this scaling in a distributed model that you know, the cement industry has already taken, and that will hopefully prove out one successful partnership and then be able to cozy up next to every cement plant in America with a little limestone farm.
You know, podcast is a very visual medium. Can you, anyone who has never seen a photobioreactor before, like, what does it look like? I know what it looks like because it's right here in our lab downstairs in our basement. What does it look like for someone who has never seen this before?
Yeah, that's a good question. As a photobioreactor, which we call PBRs for short, not Pabst Blue Ribbon, it's a photobioreactor. They're actually really cool to look at. They're all really bubbly. We bubble in either CO2 or air, and then they're lighted up, obviously, because they're meant to grow photosynthetic organisms that get their energy from light. So it's really like a big tank that's bubbling, and it's lighted up, and it's really like just a very large aquarium. It has a lot of salt water in it, and we are growing algae as fast as we can.
So I see you in the lab, you know, working with these, what are the 5-liter carboys full of your algae. And but the reason why you won Killer of the Week, actually you won Killer of the Week twice, and we'll go into the reasons why you won Killer of the Week. One of them is that you scaled up to a 250-liter reactor, which is like, I don't know, 1 or 2 feet taller than you are, Sarah, and you're a pretty tall person. So why is that so important that you start scaling up immediately? I mean, you just started in our lab maybe 2 months ago. You're already at 250 liters.
Yeah, it is. And it is taller than me. I have to get on a stepladder to work with it. Yes, it's really important because the fundamental risk of our technology is in the scaling. We don't have major technical risk in terms of getting through regulatory processes because we're not changing the chemistry of this process. We're a drop-in replacement. So our risk all really comes from how quickly can we scale to make enough material to really make a dent in a market that burns over 5 billion tons of limestone per year. So the scalability is absolutely key for us. So to demonstrate that quick jump from 5 liters to 250 liters, I think is really important and sets us on the path for what we need to do.
And you have a 1250 liter coming up. So that's like 5 times bigger.
Yep.
Your next scale and jump, 5X, yep, is already getting shipped here, right?
Yes.
That's amazing. So what's in the photobioreactors is what you would call microalgae, right? Which is different from macroalgae, which is what I would imagine is like seaweed, kelp. But your strategy at Minus Materials is to have both. You have a microalgae strategy and a macroalgae strategy. Why both?
Yeah, so the micro and the macro are two different strategies. And these organisms are actually pretty different in the way that they grow and the way that they're cultivated. So when you think of the macroalgae, they are slower growing than microalgae. When you go down from a multicellular organism to a single cell, things tend to just get a lot more efficient, and the photosynthetic efficiency increases a lot. So the microalgae double every couple of hours, whereas the macroalgae do grow slower. However, there's such large natural reserves of them. It's sort of akin to old forest growth in the way that we have to maintain forests. Certain amounts of lumber has to be removed every year for maintenance reasons, for safety reasons. And if you wanted to start a lumber company today, you wouldn't go into your backyard and plant a bunch of trees because you wouldn't get anything done for 30 years.
Yeah.
So that's why we're not going out and planting a bunch of farms for these macroalgae, because they're not exactly cultivatable in a profitable way. However, it's a really unique opportunity that we have to tap into the existing supply chain that does already exist and use it for our market to prove out our strategy. All the while, we are scaling the growth of the microalgae as fast as we can in our own closed systems to create this truly on-demand, carbon-negative grown limestone that can be done anywhere. It doesn't have to be in Iceland or Brazil or Ireland. It can be in Kansas, or it can be in, you know, the Middle East.
Yeah, that makes sense. So basically, the macroalgae is something that you can't control or optimize in terms of growth rates or something, but the microalgae is something that you can, because that's, you're doing all those experiments right now in the lab, you know, in these tiny photobioreactors and scaling it up to these big photobioreactors. And you're essentially the only person who can sell the macroalgae derived limestone for cement purposes.
Yes.
Not only because you were the first one to do it, because you have the IP to do that as well. Right?
Yes, that's correct.
And then also the expertise, because you and Will have been studying this for a while. And this gets into the second reason why you won Killer of the Week. It's a four-letter word, starts with an A.
Yes, absolutely. So we've tapped into this macroalgae supply chain, we've gotten to do some really cool projects with it. We actually completed a demo project with Microsoft last year, that we poured a 1 meter cubed concrete slab that contained this macroalgae limestone as a carbon negative filler. And that went really well. And we have a lot of great data. We are a team that comes from the academic world, so we certainly feel very confident in our data. But we were given Killer of the Week because we have an awesome partnership with Ashgrove Cement Company, and we shipped them a sample for independent verification, according to the ASTM standards C150 and C595. So we actually have made that leap of getting our product into independent hands to verify that it really is a drop-in replacement for geological limestone.
And what those results say?
The results are that we passed. It exceeded the standards.
Okay, one last topic, and this is the elephant in the room. Economics.
Yes.
Right? Concrete is like dirt cheap. It's like, what, $150 a cubic yard or something?
Yeah, $150 a cubic yard is a good reference number. Typically ranges from like $120 to $150.
Mm-hmm. And how much will yours cost to make? I know that you're making the limestone, which is, you know, one step before the cement, which is one step before the concrete. But how much will concrete made with minus materials go for?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you for asking. Yeah, so we have done a pretty rigorous techno-economic analysis, and we've shown that by 2030, although, as you might imagine, growing a biorenewable mineral is going to be more expensive than digging dirt out of the ground. Limestone is dirt that's out of the ground. So we're up against a really unique challenge. But we have shown that we're going to be able to sell concrete at around a 1.5x increase in price per cubic yard by 2030. And that's not relying on any other revenue streams or clever benefits we might get from things like the Inflation Reduction Act, tax credits, as well as carbon dioxide removal credits. and selling co-products like our algae biomass, we're finding is really well suited to the fish feed market. So we, you know, envision eventually having an offtake agreement with a fish feed company and having that be additional revenue that can be, you know, used to help the bottom line.
Interesting. So it'll be 1.5x without considering the byproducts that you can make from the algae, all these tax credits, et cetera. And so that'll bring it basically to at or below parity of, let's call it, less environmentally friendly procured concrete.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great way to look at it. And I think, you know, we don't want to rely on any handouts or any clever tricks. So that's why we have the number of the 1.5 increase with no help. But yeah. Also, like, these, like, there's ample support from, like, regulatory agencies and just clever tricks in the marketplace with this CDR stuff nowadays.
Yeah.
That we're certainly keeping our ear to the ground on all of that to maximize our scalability.
Yeah. And 1.5x increase of the concrete isn't that much compared to the huge carbon reduction that you get with minus materials. I don't think we've even talked about the impact yet, right? So how much more green is minus's concrete?
Yeah, absolutely. This is something that a lot of people don't realize is that concrete is actually pretty cheap and it's really carbon intensive. So concrete is typically around 1% of a building project cost, but it usually accounts for about 50% of the carbon.
Wow.
So when you think about the 1.5x increase, that's a good lens that helps people understand what we're talking about. It's a cheap commodity material, but it has the potential to really move the needle on the embodied carbon of a project. And with minus materials, switching our biorenewable limestone for your regular geological limestone without changing anything else in the process, you see a 60% reduction in CO2 emissions. And that's not changing anything else. That's using the same dirty coal-fired kiln at 1450 degrees Celsius and the same plant that we were using yesterday. It's just about switching that input material.
Wow. Just switching the input, but leaving everything else dirty, 60% reduction in the carbon emissions. And if you were to replace all those dirty things with like electric clinkering and all that, you would even get lower than 60%. How much lower?
Switching out the input material with our biogenic limestone, you start with that 60% reduction. If we were to use alternative fuels or an electric clinkering source, then it would go down to 100% reduction. You'd have carbon neutral cement essentially at that point.
Wow.
Because that eliminates the main two point sources of emissions, which are just the process emissions of calcination of limestone. CaCO3 becomes CaO, so CO2 goes somewhere and it goes up into the atmosphere. And the other side of that is fossil fuels that are burnt for pyro processing. So if we can eliminate the process emissions with the limestone, that's 60%. We can eliminate the fossil fuel emissions, that's 40%. And then things start to really get interesting because you can even then stack carbon capture and utilization and storage on top of that. So all in all, to stack the use of biorenewable limestone with a emissions-free clinkering technology, be it electric, electrochemical, or solar, with carbon capture, utilization, and storage outfitted at the cement plant, we can get down to 160% reduction.
Wow.
To the point where, as we're making more cement, we're actually healing the planet rather than hurting it.
And what?
We're sucking up carbon instead of emitting it.
What a vision. I love that. Wow. Okay. So takeaway for those of you who might have spaced out, 1% of a...
No.
1% of a building's cost is attributed to the concrete, but that's like 50% of the carbon emissions. And with minus, you can take out 60% of that carbon emission. So you're taking that 50% down to 20%, all for the low price of 0.5% of that building cost. I mean, if that were like a checkbox when I'm like ordering a flight for the holidays, would you like to increase by 0.5% for a 30% reduction in your carbon emissions? I'd be like, yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. And I could see anyone in the future who cares about maybe LEED certification, all that, would definitely check this box. And Sarah just mentioned that there are ways to even stack this technology to make it carbon negative, minus 160% in carbon emissions. So that's incredible. I'm super excited about this vision and future that you're building. What should people be excited about in 2023?
Well, in 2023, we're hoping to do our first regenerative quarry pilot, working with a major cement plant as a partner. So we're going to set up some racks of carboys, a little cockle at the Four Farm at a cement plant. And we're also currently raising a seed round in order to expand into a pilot facility, expand our team a little bit. And we know through our techno-economic analysis, all of the work ahead of us is on scaling. And in order to make it work, we have to boost biomass productivity as much as we can. We have to make these things grow as good and as fast as they can. And we have to optimize, almost like ruthlessly optimize our cultivation units to the point where they're completely perfectly designed for what we're doing. And there's no extra bells and whistles, but there's also not nothing missing that we need.
Awesome. All right. Well, that's it for the show. You've heard from Minus Materials. If you'd like to learn more, go to indiebio.co. Just search Minus Materials, or you can just go to Google and just search Minus Materials, and you'll probably find them all over the internet. And we'll see you next time on the IndieBio Killer of the Week podcast, where we'll be interviewing with the other killers, Nitrifix, who is making green ammonia straight from air and water, no hydrogen needed, and it's replacing the dirty, dirty Haber-Bosch process that is used to make ammonia today. And we also have Gozen Bioworks, who is making the world's strongest, softest alternative to leather using a nanocellulose. And they have lots of traction with lots of companies, automotive, big designers, etc. And they just reduced their COGS by like 50% and are opening up their pilot facility now. So don't forget to like, subscribe, follow, whatever it is that podcasters do. And don't forget to sign up for Demo Day coming January 19th, 2023. Go to our website. You'll find the way to sign up. And we will see you next week. Happy holidays.